The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, candidate Hugh Hewitt from Studio Winterfell, Studio North, on Monday, July the 25th. In the year of our Lord, 2022, I hope you have somehow got under some water and survived the weekend in a lot of part of the country. It is the lead story today. Triple-digit temperatures break records in the Northeast, but they broke records all across the world, and we are going to continue to break records, and we're going to continue to find ways to keep going. We're going to adapt and mitigate and grow. That is the strategy. Adapt, mitigate, grow, develop new scientific technologies to keep more people comfortable and humankind flourishing. Let me, however, tell you that the one thing you don't want to have in your life is the smoke alarm go off at 3 o'clock in the morning because the battery is low. That's what happened last night with the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I. She, of course, heard it, and I, of course, did not. But she, of course, woke me up to take care of it. She took care of it. I just sort of, if I'm in a deep sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, it takes me a while to kind of figure out what's going on. I wouldn't be particularly good on the Titanic when it was, I would have slept through that. All of a sudden there would have been water in the bed and I wouldn't have known what's going on. And so getting a ladder and getting the thing down, of course you can't take those things off. You can't get the battery out. They're designed to completely make you flee the house, even if there is no fire. But that's why I'm grumpy this morning. What about you? I also am not grumpy. I'm intrigued. I don't do much in the way of social media over the weekend. I write a column for the Post, and if I see something on Twitter, I'll post it, or a lot of sports on the weekend. But I saw a tweet from, I think, Tim Graham over at Newsbusters that got my attention. And Tim Graham over at Newsbusters had a clip of Chris Hayes of MSNBC, smart lefty, Stephen Colbert, funny lefty, talking to each other on Stephen Colbert's Late Show, which Greg Gutfeld now beats every night in a revolution against late night being overtly political. Stephen Colbert is very, very left wing, and therefore he's very, very political, and center right America won't watch him. And NBC hadn't figured this out yet. No one's figured out. Why does no one trust television? Because everyone's overtly political and they don't tell you. But sometimes an exchange can be unintentionally revealing. So I posted this on Saturday with just that comment. It's not much of a comment, right? It just says, this is unintentionally quite revealing. And, I'm not a Twitter king. I'm a Twitter princeling. Mr. as a blue check, that doesn't mean it's like I'm in the extended Twitter kingdom family. Most people have like a million followers, and I've got 192 or 3,000 followers, whatever it is. The center right doesn't use Twitter in the same way the left wing does, and that's fine. But I saw this, and it was liked by 1,150 people and retweeted by 232. It's had 343,000 impressions. That comment, just that little comment, this is unintentionally quite revealing. So I want you to hear what it is, and then I'll give you the rest of the rundown of the news. But as I've told people, I think the January 6th committee jumped the shark on Thursday. Now, the left wing thinks it was great, but the attempt to smear Josh Hawley revealed unintentionally, completely, that they were on a revenge tour and driven by fury. I mean, Josh Hawley has nothing. A picture of Josh Hawley running from a mob or a video of it is nothing substantive. It's an appeal to emotion. What Dr. Kissinger talked about in his book, Leadership, that we cannot and must not be captive of images, but we are in an age that is captive to image. So that was played by the Nancy Pelosi 1-6 committee for the sole purpose of enraging people, angering people, and getting the built-in left-wing lunatic audience of Trump haters to hate on somebody else. It was the 2 minutes of hate from Orwell, just completely. So this, however, followed that, Chris Hayes and Stephen Colbert, either on Thursday or Friday night, I'm not sure, but I only saw on Saturday morning. Play cut 16 for me, if you will, Jacob.
You've been reporting on politics for 20 years. This is the ninth hearing tonight?
Eighth
hearing tonight. What has most surprised you? Is anything about that surprised you most about the last eight hearings?
Well, I think, I mean, the sheer amount of new information they have uncovered is genuinely remarkable.
And
I mean,
how they've given it to us.
That is the other, that was exactly what I was just going to say. It is, as a television practitioner, it has been a tour de force of production.
I think it's going to change how any congressional hearing is held to a standard, because the, you know, the circus that usually happens is no longer going to be seen as entertainment. This is actually informative and interesting.
Yes, although the precondition, the necessary, and I agree, but the necessary precondition for that is that you have a unanimity of purpose among the members of the committee across party lines to get to the bottom of what happened and to present their case to the American public. That is usually not the case.
Right.
If Jim Jordan were up there in his shirt sleeves,
right,
you know, and, you know, it, and everything is broken down in majority time, minority time, you know, response, rebuttal, you can't do what they're doing.
I think that is proof that Kevin McCarthy does not deserve to be speaker because he doesn't understand politics well enough to know what his own game was. We got to take a quick break. We'll come back to this.
All right, so I'm going to ask for your comments on that, 1-800-520-1234. I would illustrate a number of things. Chris Hayes, nice enough guy, just a very left-wing guy and not particularly bright when it comes to understanding where the center-right is or where the country is generally, says the sheer amount of information, most of it was hearsay and none of it was new. So there's been no new information about anything in the course of the hearing. Zero, zip. Nothing that we did not know already by filings from the Department of Justice and the Washington Post Pulitzer Prize winning investigation into what Trump was doing that day. I mean, everything is a rehash. Secondly, this Colbert saying this is going to change how any congressional hearing is held to a standard. That's absolutely absurd and demonstrates that Stephen doesn't really know anything about Congress because this is a one-off. A complete abdication of congressional standards and an exercise in the abusive process that repels a lot of Americans as demonstrably unfair. And it's because it's not, quote, as they would have you believe. Chris Hayes says, is unanimity of purpose across party lines? No, it's the unanimity of Nancy Pelosi's purpose, aided and abetted by Liz Cheney and the other guy. And so they have two Republicans who agreed to serve, and they did not let Republicans name their side of the committee or let them hire counsel. So it's absolutely, I'm not going to call it a show trial because that gives a bad name to some show trials, which at least allow a decent defense counsel or an opposite point of view. And if Jim Jordan is up there in shirt sleeves, Chris Hayes doesn't make an argument. If Jim Jordan is up there in shirt sleeves, what? What happens, Chris? Do you hear something you don't want to hear? Is that it? Because that's what I think it means. He also called himself a practitioner of television, as opposed to a journalist. Now, I'm a journalist. I'm a center-right journalist. I am a conservative Republican who tells you that and then gives you the facts, which I'm about to do in my rundown of the news. But I would like to know what you think, 1-800-520-1234, about that clip. And if you want to add your written comment, go to Twitter, follow me on Hugh Hewitt, scroll down a few of my tweets and you'll find it. I'm just astonished that a lot of people seem to get it immediately. And if you're never afraid to play what the other side says in whole, that means what the other side did is just shoot themselves in the foot. Hang on to that clip. All right. President Biden's COVID-19 symptoms got better over the weekend. Good for that. Pray for the president's complete and quick recovery. He's taking Pavlovics, which I believe all senior citizens ought to take. On U.S. foreign policy, the new boss acts like a lot of old one. The New York Times recognizes that, in fact, China is the problem now, and Donald Trump got there first. And we're looking at a Fed rate hike this week, and for a lot of good reasons, but that means the dollar is very strong. And when I come back, I'll tell you about what that means in the economic report brought to you by Birch Gold over at HughGold.com. But also, New York Times yesterday, the anti-Trump forces continue to move their hope around. Whenever they move on to the next thing that's going to get Trump, because the last thing that was going to get Trump failed, they tell you about it. And the New York Times is now talking about the Atlanta grand jury investigation, the Atlanta prosecutor. And that's the new big thing for the left trying to get Donald Trump. It's the hunt for Moby Dick. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening. On Mondays, I like to remind people, if you're not following me on Twitter, please do. I'm about to talk. I just re-upped my my comment on Saturday that this is unintentionally quite revealing. It's a Tim Graham of Media Busters clip of Stephen Colbert and Chris Hayes talking to each other, demonstrating the ill effects of the blue bubble on people without legal training or deep knowledge of history. I mean, they are living in a blue bubble where they hear one thing and one thing only, which is the 1-6 committee is a great success. It's not. It's got low viewership as national events go. And it's not changed any minds to any significant degree. And it's deeply unfair. And the American people know it's deeply unfair. And that deep unfairness was best demonstrated by the sideswipe of Josh Hawley, who has got nothing to do with what Trump did or didn't do on January 6th, the former president's conduct, allegedly the point of the hearing on Thursday night. But they began with a clip of Mitch McConnell to run him over, and they ended with one of Josh Hawley to shame him and him a hypocrite. Nonsense, by the way. If a mob's coming at you, run the other way. Did not call on people to take over the Capitol. It's just pure 2 minutes of hate, George Orwell stuff, if you've read 1984. But I genuinely don't think that Chris Hayes and Stephen Colbert have any idea what they're saying. I want to replay that right now.
You've been reporting on politics for 20 years. This is the ninth hearing tonight?
Eighth
hearing tonight. What has most surprised you? Is anything about that surprised you most about the last eight hearings?
Well, the sheer amount of new information they have uncovered is genuinely remarkable.
How they've given it to us.
That is exactly what I was just going to say. It is, as a television practitioner.
Yeah.
It has been a tour de force of production.
I think it's going to change how any congressional hearing
absolutely.
Is held to a standard, because the circus that usually happens is no longer going to be seen as entertainment. This is actually informative and interesting.
Yes, although the precondition, the necessary, and I agree, but the necessary precondition for that is that you have a unanimity of purpose among the members of the committee across party lines to get to the bottom of what happened and to present their case to the American public. That is usually not the case.
Right.
If Jim Jordan were up there in his shirt sleeves,
right.
And everything is broken down in majority time, minority time, response, rebuttal. You can't do what they're doing.
I think that is proof that Kevin McCarthy does not deserve to be speaker, because he doesn't understand politics well enough to know what his own game was. I'm sorry, we've got to take a quick break. We'll come back to this.
It's really quite astonishing. This is what happens when you combine confirmation bias with ignorance, when you're wearing completely thick partisan blinkers and your blinders to everything else are on while you're in the blue bubble. So the only thing you see in here is confirmation bias endorsing and deepening rhetoric. You're not exposed to anything else. And that's why modern media, modern television news especially, has lost, the confidence of the American people to this lowest level ever, is that that's all they get. They don't have anyone who can step outside themselves and criticize themselves. By the way, the attack on the right is expanding. The lead story in the Washington Post today is an attack on the Claremont Institute and my longtime colleague and friend, John Eastman. I disagreed with John's assessment of the law. I do not believe he committed any crimes. They failed to neglect that not one member of a law school faculty at Chapman signed the letter against him. They had a letter against him at Chapman signed by, and it was, by John's view, defamatory, and the university did not argue with him about that. The law school was led by John for a number of years, and leftists, centrists, and conservatives all liked him as a dean. John, though, is a rigorous scholar, reaches his conclusions and hangs on like a pit bull. He was wrong on the 14th Amendment, and I still think he's wrong on birthright citizenship, and he was wrong about the Electoral Count Act. But wrong doesn't mean rotten, and John is a brilliant scholar. And the Claremont Institute, where he continues to head the Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence, continues to prosper, but they're opening up an assault. What I read in that especially is they're broadening the assault to include Larry Arn, who used to be the leader of the Hillsdale, of the Claremont Institute, 20 years ago, before he took over Hillsdale College, and they're going after Hillsdale College. So double down on your donations to Hillsdale. They didn't pay me to say that. I just tell you that the attempt to delegitimize everything by the blue bubble, the giant blue bubble nestled into its cozy warrens in Manhattan and Washington, D.C., in the Los Angeles film community and Silicon Valley, high-tech ignorance, is just bathed in ignorance of law and history and absolutely set on confirmation bias. So what did you make of that clip? Isaiah in Virginia, 30-second rule in effect, Isaiah, except for Yoni when I get to him, because we got to move through a lot of calls here. What did you make of that clip?
Well, I mean, it's one of those things that doesn't surprise me anymore. I mean, you'll see this quite often, but I'll say I don't see many Republican leaders in Congress battling this. They're not really going to warfare. I've seen more on Ben Shapiro than I have on Kevin McCarthy or Jim Jordan, any of the other major political leaders in our Congress. And I think that even though you don't have a lot of big speakers talking against this, which is honestly, the January 6th committee is really a Democratic committee out to get Donald Trump. Let's just be clear.
That's it. That's what it is. But by the way, you will hear, I want the audience to, you'll hear, Kevin McCarthy turned down the chance to participate. No, he didn't. He rejected Nancy Pelosi's destruction of the rules for putting together a committee, naming your ranking member. And he accepted even Liz and the other guy being on it. But then he wouldn't accept. They vetoed Jim Banks, who would have made a superb senior member of the minority. I also would add that they say, well, the Congress, he rejected a deal struck by one of his people on a bipartisan commission. That's up to Congress to decide. The Senate rejected it, as did the House. And that's because we did not think the ground rules, we being Republicans, were fair. So they, oh, well, you didn't want to go along with our pretend to be fair commission. So we'll just install an inquisition. And boy, has it revealed itself. Don't you think that clip of Josh Hawley just showed how desperate they are to have revenge on people?
Oh, sure. But I mean, you know, regardless of who they put on Stephen Colbert or any other, you know, show on television, you know, the January 6th committee, regardless of anybody's political preference or anybody's views they televise, it's not going to sway anything come November because of the large failure of this president.
Oh, I agree. And we're going to be in a recession as of Thursday. In fact, they're outspinning today. Oh, you know, two quarters of negative growth doesn't mean a recession. Yes, it does. It's the textbook definition. Isaiah, thank you. Mike in Wisconsin. 30 seconds. Mike, what do you think?
Is there any better example of how the left wants to completely do away with American jurisprudence and due process? This is exactly what they want to do to sexual claims on campus and with the innocent trespassers on January 6th. There's no need for due process.
Well, number one, Mike, if a trespasser is innocent, they won't be prosecuted. I want to prosecute every single person who entered the Congress unless they were swept along against their own volition. And there are some people like that who literally didn't know where they were going and thought they were marching in an illegitimate way. But if you entered that illegally, it is illegal trespass at a minimum. Some people entered with violence in their heart and tried to kill the vice president of the United States. I believe some people are actually felony murder charges are against them because of the death of Ashley Babbitt. But we'll come back. Bob in Florida, go ahead. What do you think of the clip?
I thought it was unconstitutional, to be honest with you.
It is. It's an assault on the Fifth Amendment's guarantees of due process, which ought to apply to congressional inquiry. Randy in Tennessee, got to go quick. Randy, go.
Hey, Hugh. I don't think that these guys are in a bubble like you were saying. I think they know exactly what they're doing, which means they know that they're lying. It's Goebbelesque propaganda that they're spewing to us to try
all right
to change our minds.
Randy, thank you. You're harsher than I am. I just think they're products of living in bubbles. Yoni. Okay, Yoni, you've only got 3 minutes. I'm just going to give you the floor.
Okay. First of all, best case scenario, these two are useful idiots, as Lennon used to call them. Worst case scenario, they know exactly what they're calling for. They're calling for the demise of the United States as we know it. They want Soviet Stalinist show trials to be the norm in our country, which will totally do away with our Constitution, our freedom, and our liberty. We're in the middle of a Marxist revolution. It is, thank God, at this point in time, nonviolent. But these people are pushing for a Marxist government in our country, no ands, ifs, or buts. If this is a fair committee, and if this is the way that things are going to be run from now on in the United States, what's going to happen with our whole criminal justice system? It's going to completely collapse because you're going to have show trials that will eventually go down to regular criminal proceedings, and we will become the Soviet Union.
I'm going to break in. I don't think they're knowing Marxists. I just think they're morons. And I really think they're ignorant of law and history and they know not what they say. I will say this. I also believe I don't want the Republicans to do to Hunter Biden what the Republicans are doing, what the Democrats are doing to Josh Hawley and everyone else caught up in the backwash of this thing. They could hold a one-sided committee. They could put their most naked partisans and then get a couple of useful idiots from the other side. And I don't know if any Democrat would want to be on there. I would go out and they don't have a Liz Cheney who is smart and effective, but who would turn on Hunter Biden. But we could go find a couple of their dummies, and they got a lot of dummies. Every caucus has got a smartest member and a dumbest member. So you can go find two dumb members, match them up with five Machiavels and give them a great stat, and then turn them loose on Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. That would not tell us anything. I mean, we've all seen the videos. I don't need to see the videos out of context, and I don't need to see videos of people defending Hunter Biden when they didn't know. As you say, show trials, Yoni, they're not a mark of any free society anywhere.
No, that's correct. And regarding Hunter Biden, we know that he violated federal firearms laws. I want to see him prosecuted for that in a fair court of law, and that he stands before a jury of his peers.
I'm not familiar with that. I'm not familiar. What did he do on federal firearms laws? I don't follow it very closely. I just view him as an addict, and it's unfortunate.
He falsified the 4473, which is the form that you fill out when you buy a handgun. And he said that he was not a drug addict and doesn't use drugs habitually.
Okay, so it's a false statement act. You know, that he's an addict, and addicts do terrible things. And I have a great deal of compassion for him. I hope he's clean and sober. And I hope I understand his father's solicitude for him. I hope it did not result in Chinese corruption of the government. But Yoni, I got to roll on. Thank you, buddy. You're right. It's just a show trial. I've got a friend that says, don't do that. I give show trials a bad name because in the Stalinist era, at least, they gave accused defense counsel who would stand up and cite the Soviet Constitution or at least go through the motion. None of that here. Welcome back, America. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas joins me. Two big subjects on the table, CHIPS Act and the Nancy Pelosi 1-6 committee. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. I'm good. I'm a little hot. It's been a hot time down in Arkansas. I know you're enjoying cool weather up in Maine, but you need
yes,
to
I am.
Suffer with the rest of us.
I'm so glad I'm not there. Senator, I was in favor of the CHIPS Act Plus when it was a $76 billion expenditure. It's gone to $280 billion. I don't know what's in there. Are you going to support it?
No, Hugh, I have not. I've generally supported efforts to try to bring more semiconductor manufacturing back to the United States. In particular, the most urgent challenge is diversifying the manufacturing basis for a company known as the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, TSMC. They make the world's most advanced semiconductor chips. And it's not safe for Taiwan or for the United States or for the world economy to have those chips made only on an island that's 120 miles away from mainland China, which has thousands of missiles aimed at it. So I think there's more targeted approaches we could get to help TSMC diversify its manufacturing base without, in my view, some of the problematic provisions of this massive bill, putting aside the amount of money it spends. I'm not sure that money is correctly targeted at the core of the problem, nor does it have sufficient security and counterintelligence measures, especially at the National Science Foundation, which is basically an academic grant-making institution, and our universities and colleges, many of which, suffice to say, do not follow best practices when it comes to protecting its Chinese espionage.
You know, I don't know if you followed it, but Rishi Sunak aimed a big barrel at a political nightmare at Liz Truss over the weekend by pointing out that when she was Minister of Education, Confucius Institutes opened up 30 of them in Great Britain. And those are thinly veiled fronts for the Chinese Communist Party. It'll be interesting to follow that. But I want to go to the Nancy Pelosi 1-6 committee, Senator, because Josh Hawley is your colleague. And when that committee departed from its alleged intent to smear him and attempt to shame him by the manipulation of image, not only did they fulfill what Dr. Kissinger told me on Friday on this show, that we are in an age of image that is replacing reason, I think they nakedly revealed that they're fueled by rage and fury and no other mission at all. What did you make of that particular moment?
Hugh, I think that was clear from the very beginning of this committee. It was clear in Nancy Pelosi's refusal to seat Jim Jordan and Jim Banks as Republican members of that committee, a break with precedent going back to the beginning of the House of Representatives in the 18th century. And I think what you've seen over the last few weeks is why Anglo-American jurisprudence going back centuries has found that adversarial inquiry, cross-examination, is the best way to get at the truth. There is no one on that committee who takes a view different from Nancy Pelosi, or even a view that's like we should examine the full context of all of these statements, of all of these recordings, of all of this video. We have no idea if the videos and the audio recordings and the testimony is being presented in its full context. For instance, all those snippets of depositions you see the committee putting up, they've never released the full transcripts. They've never released the full videos. We have no idea what those witnesses said in the full context of their depositions. And even if we had those, there was no lawyer in the room who was probing in the other direction. So, for instance, you remember, I think one of the witnesses testified that the president supposedly lunged for the steering wheel in one of the presidential vehicles. Well, did anyone ask the Secret Service agents who were in that vehicle whether he did that or not? To my knowledge, they did not. Why? Because it's such a convenient story for them. Why would they want to get in the way of the story? This is why they hired a former TV news producer to make these hearings.
So let me ask you specifically about Josh Hawley, what they call jogging Josh. And this really outrages me because it is a manipulation of video to engage an emotional response from the hard left of the sort that ends up with what we had with Brett Kavanaugh, the attack on Lee Zeldin. It's an appeal to anger and rage. And I have never seen, well, I'm not old enough to remember Army McCarthy hearings when Joe Welch said, "Have you no decency, sir?" But that was really an indecent moment. That was the manipulation of video for no purpose whatsoever other than to make the left even angrier with Josh Hawley. Or am I wrong?
I can't see any other reason for it, Hugh. Like what the purpose of the hearing, what like inquiry they were conducting to try to get it. Some kind of understanding of actions that happened that day that then might be the subject of proper legislative response within the scope of Congress's responsibilities.
You were a...
I'll confess, though, Hugh, not. I will confess that I did not watch that hearing, and I have not watched any of the hearings, so I have not seen any of them out of the context that I see a snippet here or there on the news.
Well, I just got to tell you, Chris Hayes and Stephen Colbert on Thursday night or Wednesday night were congratulating themselves on how these hearings have finally produced a hearing worthy of emulation. That's so ignorant of law and history that I can't even begin to communicate. 30 seconds. What is the principal defect of this committee?
That it has no adversarial process whatsoever. Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, the two Republicans, clearly share the views of the Democrats on the subject of the committee's inquiry. If you had someone like Jim Jordan or Jim Banks on there, not only would they be privy to all the information, but they would be probing that information and probing witnesses to try to get at truth, which is, again, what the Anglo-American legal system has done for centuries.
It's what the Fifth Amendment is all about. I just hope people understand what a great, great aberration this is from American history and law. Senator Tom Cotton, sweat it out another couple of weeks. I feel really bad for you. Not. Enjoy. Get your runs in, though. Get your runs in, because there's no excuse. He did no excuse. I'll be right back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. It's Hugh Hewitt. You may remember Jason Church from my show. Jason ran for Congress, sadly unsuccessfully. I wish he would be doing it again right now. But Jason, of course, is an alumni of the United States Army, lost both of his legs on combat duty. He is now running, however, a great new group that I want to talk about today, Veterans on Watch. Good morning, Jason. Welcome back.
Hugh, thanks for having me on.
Now, I wanted you to run for Congress again. You chose instead to do Veterans on Duty. What's the deal? Why did you do that rather than run a second time?
Well, I mean, look, there's a lot of things that this country needs attention on right now, but none hit closer to home for me than what we're seeing going on in the military today. I mean, too many veterans across the United States are looking at what's going on in the Pentagon and on the world stage and are increasingly concerned about the direction of the country and the way our armed forces are training, recruiting, and I mean, I'm not even getting close to being ready to fight right now. And that scares us. So we formed Veterans on Duty as a watchdog group to make sure the Pentagon's doing the right thing. And right now, clearly under the Biden administration, it's not.
Now, you know, Jason, there's a good side to not having you in Congress is that outside of Congress, you can say and do whatever you want. And inside of Congress, you got to work within a partisan system. Now, I have on Tom Cotton and I have on Mike Waltz and I have on Mike Gallagher. And these are great people. I mean, really great people. But we really do need someone focused exclusively on the Pentagon, because if you saw the Politico story on the Navy over the weekend, they're so confused about what they're doing. It is an utter meltdown. And Gilday's a good man, but they just don't know what they're doing.
Well, I mean, a central component of what Veterans on Duty is focusing on is reform. All right. And we're going to be doing this through advocacy efforts because, I mean, let's look. I mean, I had a piece in the New York Post, an op-ed in there, where I was calling out the politicization of the Pentagon and the efforts of left-wing ideologues to fundamentally change the nature of the U.S. military. I mean, this isn't just, you know, Republicans and conservatives using a buzzword woke. I mean, there's CRT being taught to our soldiers. There is training seminars on transgenderism. There's white rage comment made by Mark Milley. No one's taking any responsibility for what happened in Afghanistan. And why is the Secretary of Defense issuing a statement on the abortion ruling lately? I mean, this is all stuff that is unfocused. This is a lack of focus. And Veterans on Duty is going to call out these leaders and implement policy reform, or at least push policy reform to change this. Because at the end of the day, the goal, the intent, the purpose of the U.S. military is to defend the United States from external threat and nothing else.
Jason, I got to tell you, I am a civilian. I really can distinguish myself by ignorance of basic military acronyms and things like I had to look up what did SFC mean, Sergeant First Class, because I'm about to interview Tim Kennedy about his new book, Scars and Stripes. So I really don't know anything, but I do have a son-in-law, a son, a nephew on active duty. I married into a military family, so I learned a bit over 40 years, but I still don't think the American, as a Republican, I support a healthy defense budget, but you're not talking about numbers. You're not talking about the budget. You're talking about the direction. You know, they can't hit their recruitment goals in the Army now. What's that tell you?
It shows me that the priorities are out of whack. I mean, at this point, if you're not even hitting recruiting numbers, and this has been the worst it's been since we have implemented an all-volunteer force. I mean, we are seeing a total lack of interest. People are leaving $50,000 signing bonuses on the table right now. You know, and it's hard when you have the left out there and they're saying that this country isn't even worth it to begin with. How are you going to start recruiting people to fight, sacrifice life and limb for it? I mean, that's the problem right now. And it does go beyond just the ideological component. I mean, there is an element here of budget reform. There is an element here where we need to start looking at making sure our force can fight the wars of tomorrow and not be looking at, you know, winning the wars of yesterday. And those are all things that require the Congress to become far more proactive in this process. They need to be holding military leaders accountable. We need to be reforming how things are bought. And this is some of the stuff that Veterans on Duty will be hitting.
Now, what's the website for Veterans on Duty? The Twitter handle is just that, Veterans on Duty. And yours is Jason Church WI. But what is the website for Veterans on Duty?
It's vetsonduty.org. Again, that's vetsonduty.org. Come to our website, check us out, join our cause. We're bringing the fight to Washington, and we're going to be doing it the same way we all did in uniform. If you serve, or if you're someone much like yourself who understands, you know, by having married into it, what happens and what the sacrifice of our men and women in uniform are, I implore you, I ask you all to join us, because this is a fight that we have to take to Washington.
Now, when you take it to Washington, what does that mean? Explain to people why advocacy groups exist and how they operate. You were, you know, I didn't know about Vets on Duty until our buddy Noonan called me up and said, do you know about this? And I didn't. So I'm eager to help you get the word out. But people want to know, OK, how are you operating? What are you doing?
Well, there's a few things. One, we're going to start publicly putting out pieces like this, like I did in the New York Post the other day. We have, I mean, I'm only one of many veterans who are putting a voice out there to this. You're going to be starting to see more content from us coming out. The other part of this is going out and finding people to run for Congress or helping people who are running for Congress who have the same goals and mindset, understand the intent and purpose of the military, and won't be persuaded or changed by that swamp in Washington, because that's what happens sometimes. You get people who go out there and they get engulfed in the system, and we need fighters, obviously, like Tom Cotton and Mike Waltz, who go up there and bring it every single day. But they need allies. They need people up there who are going to be able to lend a voice with them, because like you said, you're just one of 535 people. You know, you need more, and we need to amplify that voice. And that's what Veterans on Duty is going to have a huge part of.
VetsOnDuty.org, VetsOnDuty.org. Now, Jason, the cycle in American history is a Congress full of fighters, then one not full of combat veterans, then one full of... We are on the upswing as the Greatest Generation 2.0 shows up in the halls of Congress, people who fought in the long war after 9/11. Do you think Congress is going to change significantly from what has basically been... a non-experienced, they're not anti, they just don't know anything. They know less than I do. And that's nothing about military culture needs, even budgeting. I honestly don't think they know what they do when they do a CR to the Pentagon as opposed to a budget.
Yeah, Hugh and I, you know, Hugh, you and I would know that one of the biggest things that Congress does every single year is pass the National Defense Authorization Act. And for your listeners, this is the budget for the military. It's passed on an annual basis, and it's the biggest spending bill that goes through the halls of Congress. That's discretionary spending. And that's how it should be. I mean, that's what our federal government should be focused on, is the defense of the nation. The problem with the process right now is you're getting Democrats who are trying to implement this cultural reform, taking focus away from the warfighting function. I think part of this stems from, like you said, a lot of people who are in the Congress right now who haven't put on a uniform. But I'll be honest. I think there are a lot of good fighters out there who understand that the military is the priority of the federal government, even if they haven't put on a uniform. The problem is that the other side of the aisle right now clearly doesn't understand that. Clearly doesn't care about it and is more interested in implementing the political and cultural reform because it makes sense to their base. It gets their base all happy and riled up. And that's a big problem because now we are exposing ourselves and we are certainly more vulnerable now as a nation than I think we were 20 years ago.
Right. I've got to agree with you for one last thing. I want to go back around to this Politico piece. The general officers of the military underwent something of a politicization during the Obama years. Trump fought back against it fairly unsuccessfully because the Pentagon was a mess under Trump. It's his greatest failure, the inability to fund a Navy, the inability to get good people in. One of his senior advisors told me that they would hit the ground running again and they'd look at the Pentagon first. Now we have completely conflicted Pentagon, about 18 different points of view, which means paralysis. Are you... fundamentally an optimist about the ability for Veterans on Duty or anybody to turn around the Pentagon mess?
Well, I do have faith in the American people. I do have faith in the First Amendment. I do have faith in the fact that if we get our message out there, it will make enough noise and bring enough momentum to fundamentally change aspects of the Pentagon. I wouldn't be standing here talking, fighting, and doing it every day if I didn't believe that. The thing is, we've got a system right now at the Pentagon that incentivizes officers to check the block, to do the things that their political appointees want them to do, because inevitably to rise up in the higher ranks, to get those stars pinned up on your shoulder, you've got to get somebody in political office to say you're a person who can do that. And that's part of the problem. You have generals right now and admirals that have decided it's a better idea to be more political then focus on the needs of their respective branches. And that's a problem. What it does is it's an attempt to change the culture, But the problem is the Pentagon itself is over bloated. I mean, when you look at the current state of affairs, you have at this point more civilian appointees, people who aren't in uniform, civilian appointees working in the services than we've ever had. And uniform personnel numbers have dropped to the lowest number in recent memory. So what that means is we have a lot of civilians telling, you know, a lot of the military at levels that they shouldn't be what to do. And this is how you get some of this ridiculous doctrine that's come up.
Last question, Jason, on behalf of everyone who's in the military right now, and my kids are fine, but the basic enlistee had 9% inflation and a 5% pay hike. What's that do to people? I mean, you know what it's like. You were a first lieutenant, right? You had to command a platoon of 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, and some of them are married and they don't have any money.
My brother is currently serving and he's enlisted, and I certainly am hearing from him the problems caused by inflation, the problems caused by the rising cost of everything. And, you know, our service members don't earn that much money.
No, they don't.
They earn it, you know, and especially when you're talking about the lower enlisted, and this just stops them from being able to. And they have to spend more money on basic needs, and they're not able to invest. They're not able to start putting money away so that maybe that time comes where they separate from the service and maybe they want to start a family. Maybe they want to put a down payment on a house. And these are things that they are not able to do in the current economy. And that's a darn shame.
And they also don't reenlist. They also say, I can't afford this for four more years. And that's why I realize. Well, Jason Church, keep coming back. Veterans on Duty. The website is vetsonduty.org. The Twitter handle is Veterans on Duty, fully spelled out, but the website is vetsonduty.org. And Jason Church, WI, good to talk to you again. Thank you for joining me, Jason.
Hugh, thanks for having me on.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. My buddy Andrazik, John Andrazik, Five for Fighting, called me up about 6 weeks ago and said, you got to come see a movie. I don't want to go downtown D.C. 6 weeks ago. John, what's it about? It's about the collapse of Afghanistan. Oh, okay. And you'll meet Tim Kennedy. And I honest to God said, and no offense to my next guest, Tim Kennedy, who's Tim Kennedy? Because I don't follow mixed martial arts or the UFC. And he said, well, what are you, a moron? Everybody knows who Tim Kennedy is. But I didn't. And so I got to the movie. I saw it. Met Tim Kennedy, and then I read his book, Scars and Stripes, and I'm very glad to talk to him now. He is a Green Beret, a sniper, and a former MMA fighter. He was on History Channel's Hunting Hitler and Discovery's Hard to Kill. There's a lot about Tim Kennedy, and it's all in this book. Tim, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Man, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, I met you briefly at the film, and I spent a lot of time talking to Nick, but no time talking with you. And then I read your book and I said, wow, what a backstory. But, you know, there are a lot of people like me who are 66 and they've never watched MMA or UFC. Are you finding that the country is divided into those who have a complete clue and those who have none about MMA and UFC?
Yeah, I actually get along way easier and better with those that have no idea who I am, because the fight fans, they're a different breed. They're hilarious and I love fighting for them. You know, 20 years as a professional athlete, but we honestly don't have that much in common. So every time it's like, man, who are you? I'm like, oh, we're going to be friends, or we have a better chance already.
Yeah. Well, I love your dad, by the way. Your dad raises kids the way I think kids should be raised, which is come home at the end of the day. And I just love it. I want to get to UFC and MMA, but first I want to talk about the most important thing about Scars and Stripes. It's about your time as a Green Beret. It's about your time going back to rescue people in Afghanistan. That's what the new movie you and Nick made. Do you have any idea when it's going to drop, Tim Kennedy?
I mean, so it's funny you ask. We just decided in the past 48 hours that we are going to rush our documentary about the fall of Afghanistan. So myself and three other men went into Afghanistan, and we moved 12,000 people in a matter of 10 days, 17,000 people since the total collapse of the country. But in 10 days, we moved 12,000 Americans, green card, P1, SIV, essentially Americans' allies that have been over there or that were going to be killed by the Taliban. We went over to get out. And the complete catastrophic strategic failure that was the leaving of Afghanistan in that time is what this documentary is about. It's what happened in real time on the ground. And I think we're going to rush it. Next month is the one-year anniversary. And we're going to try to We're not even going to do the film circuits. We're just going to go straight to delivery because this movie people need to see.
Well, I called up as soon as I saw the rough cut, and it is a rough cut.
Yes, sir.
I called up Mike Reed, who runs SalemNow.com. I said, try and get the distribution rights to this movie because these are heroes, and we need to tell their story. And Scars and Stripes comes out at the same time, and it's your story, but it's also the story of these men who went with you. It's a story of Seaspray, who's now in Ukraine doing squirrely stuff, and Seaspray must be an interesting character. Do you stay in touch with him?
No, I just got back from Ukraine on Wednesday.
Oh.
And in the past 3 days, Seaspray just rescued another American, another journalist that was wounded while trying to report the war atrocities that are happening over there. And Seaspray went into enemy lines and rescued this guy. Absolutely heroic. When somebody finally makes a movie about this man, it is going to be something unbelievable. Nobody's going to believe what this man did.
Almost every special forces person who is at anywhere other than the left edge of the bell curve is worth an interview and a book. But yours is particularly notable because of your roundabout way. And there's a low point outside of Morro Bay. I know Morro Bay very well, Tim. I represented the largest landowner in Morro Bay who had Morro Bay kangaroo rats all over. So I would look at that rock all the time. So when you're talking about walking naked into the bay with nothing on your mind except perhaps not coming back, I'd love to meet the lady. I hope the lady who is standing on the shore gets wind of this book, because it's actually one of those inflection points where an angel shows up and saves a life.
I mean, so I don't know how to find her. She might, because, you know, Morro Bay is a retirement type town and a tourist town. But this was pre-cell phone, right? So I took my pager and I dropped it on my clothes. And I don't know if this was through divine intervention or, you know, if that was literally an angel or if that was just some amazing woman. But she would have had to have hopped into a car. This is in darkness during, you know, there's fog and darkness early morning. And she would have had to driven into town to the Coast Guard station to get help. So I don't know who she is, but, man, she definitely saved my life.
She did. And there's got to be a salty old senior chief in the Coast Guard somewhere who's going to read this. I also want to ask you, maybe we'll wait until after the break, about Sergeant First Class Will Summers. And I want to talk to you a lot about UFC as well and MMA. We're going to take a break here and come back. Let me tell everyone, Scars and Stripes is an eye-opening book that you should read only to understand what the collapse of Afghanistan was like on the ground from someone who does not have to worry about the next up in the line of command. Tim does and can and delivers the truth about those awful dozen days at the end of the 20-year war and the good, the bad, and the ugly. Indeed, the grace-filled and the courageous. Scars and Stripes tells it all, as it does, about the UFC and MMA. More of that coming back on the other side. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.